The shooting at Seattle Pacific University marks the latest gun-related tragedy in the U.S. It follows the attacks in Isla Vista at UC Santa Barbara. The country is talking about requiring treatment for the mentally ill. Here in California, this has been an ongoing conversation ever since the creation of Laura's Law. Laura Wilcox was 19 years old when she died in 2001. She was a college sophomore on winter break, working at a health clinic in Nevada County. That's where she was shot and killed by a man with severe mental illness. The next year, California adopted Laura's Law, or AB 1421. The law allows courts to compel people who suffer from mental illness to get outpatient treatment. It was left up to the counties to figure out whether to implement the law. It's been more than a decade since it passed, and only two counties have fully adopted it. Alameda County is currently debating a version of the law, but it's been controversial. On one side, parents and relatives say they need Laura's Law to help their loved ones. On the other side are many who've dealt with mental illness themselves who say their civil liberties are at stake. KALW's Liz Mack reports.
Candy DeWitt says her son Daniel was sensitive and shy as a kid.
But he always had like this inner strength. He wasn't one of those kids you had to teach right with from wrong because he kind of knew it. That's just the way he was. And I don't know, everybody liked Daniel. There wasn't nothing not to like about him.
But at the end of high school, something shifted.
We first noticed that things were going on with Daniel at the end of senior year. You know, just all the typical signs of mental illness coming out, paranoia and some delusions and, you know, other things like that. By the end of summer, he had his first psychotic break and was hospitalized.
At the time, DeWitt and her husband had no experience with mental illness. She also says her son couldn't recognize that he was sick.
He would tell me a guy's after him is going to kill him because their delusions are real. And you can sit and say, you know, no, that's not true. Look, you can show them physically how it's not true. And they will look at you and they'll say, yes, it is true. You don't know. You don't understand.
There were times DeWitt felt she needed help. So she called the police for what's called a 5150. If you think a person suffering from mental illness might hurt themselves or other people, a 5150 allows officers to forcibly take that person to a hospital to get treated. They're kept there for up to 72 hours. DeWitt says it was always a traumatic experience.
It was horrible. And, you know, they slammed him with medications and we had no idea what was happening.
Daniel was eventually diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia, but that was just the beginning of a long battle to get him help.
He came home, and from there, it just, you know, he was rehospitalized time after time after time. I mean, he would try to stay on his medication for a while. He didn't quite understand it, didn't think there was anything wrong with him. It just never lasted, and no matter what we did, we could not keep him in treatment.
DeWitt was worried about what might happen. But she could never have imagined what actually did. In 2012, Daniel was charged with murder. DeWitt couldn't talk about the details for legal reasons, so it's unclear exactly what happened. But Daniel has been in a locked psychiatric facility ever since.
To love somebody for 18 years and to see that person when they were well, when they were happy, when they were in school, when they were quote-unquote normal, get ill and then be... It feels like they're thrown away by the system.
Candy DeWitt is confident her son's fate could have been avoided. So she created the Voices of the Mothers Project. It's an advocacy group looking for a new way to help loved ones who refuse treatment. Right now, all their efforts are going to support a pilot program that would enact a version of Laura's Law in Alameda County. The program centers on what they call assisted outpatient treatment, or AOT. It would let courts compel adults like Daniel DeWitt to get long-term outpatient care, the kind of treatment that could help them fully recover. Now, not everyone agrees that AOT is really assisted treatment. Opponents say the program uses force. But Candy DeWitt says we already use force through 5150s, and she believes AOT would be a more compassionate and effective alternative.
In Alameda County, we 5150 more people per capita than any jurisdiction in the state.
That's Alex Briscoe. He runs Alameda County's Healthcare Services Agency. Back in February, the agency proposed AOT to the Board of Supervisors. Briscoe says it would only involve 5 people at first.
These are the very, very, very small number of people who are on the revolving door of EMS to psych emergency to inpatient to discharge to the park to back to EMS. I mean, these are folks who are being 5150 and coerced into care multiple times a month.
Under Alameda County's version of Laura's Law, these people would spend one day a week in court where the judge would discuss their treatment plan with mental health professionals. Under the state law, if the participants don't comply with their treatment, they could be admitted to a hospital for an evaluation. Basically, a 5150. But Briscoe says Alameda County's pilot wouldn't include that. The emphasis is less on threatening consequences and more on connecting people to resources.
Knocking on their door and saying, hey, don't you want to come into care?
And they say no.
We'll say, are you sure? How are you feeling? Is it working for you?
And for those who keep saying no,
we'll send another outreach team out with consumers who know your experience, and we'll say, hey, I've been there.
Consumers are people who use mental health services.
You don't want to go on the ambulance again, do you? You don't want to be held for 72 hours against your will again, do you? Like, there's things that work. See, it worked for me. Can I come back tomorrow and ask you again?
I know that people want to be compassionate and caring and help people, but helping people that don't want to be helped can equally be horrendous.
Sally Zinman is against the AOT pilot program and Laura's Law as a whole. For her, it's personal. One day, back in the early 70s, she woke up and no longer knew who she was.
I knew who people thought I was, but didn't accept that my name was Sally Zinman or I had gone to this college, and I did not accept that as being me. I thought everybody was lying.
She was living on the East Coast at the time, and her parents committed her to a private institution. It was more common and easier for families to do this back then.
Well, I was literally imprisoned. You know, I couldn't get out.
Zinman was in and out of institutions for years. She eventually got out and recovered on her own. But she says her experience with forced treatment wrecked her trust in the mental health system.
What I needed at the time when I broke with reality was to have control over my life and more control. And instead, what was happened was control was taken away from me. That's sort of the core of why I think outpatient commitment is wrong, is when people are disturbed and upset, they need to have some kind of involvement in their treatment, not have it taken away.
What happened to Zinman is less likely to happen today. In 1975, a Supreme Court ruling drastically limited forced psychiatric treatment, except for in extreme circumstances. And states were left to decide how to enact laws around this issue. That's what led California to Laura's Law. But for Zinman, this law is a step backwards.
It's not just about outpatient commitment. I mean, it's a much bigger fight. It's about the direction of the mental health system, and are we going to a voluntary system of comprehensive services for people? Are we going to keep doing the same old thing that is based on force?
Now, Zinman is a leading advocate for mental health consumer rights. She says what happened to Candy DeWitt's son doesn't represent the majority of people with mental illness. Most aren't perpetrators of violence. And, Zinman says, we can't use that perception to take away people's civil rights.
Vote no. This is a dangerous precedent.
Other opponents of Laura's Law were present at a recent Alameda County public hearing. People spoke for over 2 hours for and against the pilot program.
I can't describe to you the desperation of families like mine. The horror and helplessness.
You don't change force by calling it something else. Being court-ordered is based on intimidation and threats.
One side of this debate will win and one of us will lose. But if we allow the division to continue between us, everyone is going to lose.
People on both sides of the debate agree on at least one thing. The current system isn't working. Alex Briscoe from the county's healthcare services agency, even he isn't sure the county's version of Laura's Law will be successful. But he says,
I believe we have a, you know, this is my own personal position, but I believe that we have a moral and ethical obligation to see, to try.
Right now, what they're trying to do is find a middle ground. When Briscoe first proposed the pilot to the Board of Supervisors in February, they sent him and the agency back to the drawing board. They asked, can you achieve the goals of Laura's Law without adopting it at all? The pilot program is still on the table, but the agency will bring other ideas to the Board of Supervisors when it reconvenes later this month. For Cross Currents, I'm Liz Mack.